Welcome back, everybody. It's Thursday, April 11th, 2024. Born on this date in 1899, chemist Percy Lavon Julian of Montgomery. The grandson of slaves, he was a pioneer in the chemical synthesis of medicine from plants. He received well over 100 patents. Today, we have an arrest in connection to an explosive device outside the AG's office. The Democrats' response to the Alabama Secretary of State's warning that Biden might not make it onto the ballot, a big-time auto theft, and an award nomination for a music venue. We're also going to talk to reporter William Thornton about the rise of the auto industry in Alabama and the union that wants to take its place in the state. I'm Mike Morgan, and we're down in Alabama. A 26-year-old man from Irondale has been charged in the case of that explosive device that was detonated outside the Alabama Attorney General's office in February, reports AL.com's Carol Robinson. No injuries or major damage has been reported from the incident in Montgomery. Kyle Benjamin Douglas Calvert was charged with malicious use of an explosive and possession of an unregistered destructive device. Always register your destructive devices, folks. Around the time of the explosion, he is also alleged to have placed stickers with anarchist, anti-police, and Antifa messages on government buildings. Alabama Democrats are working with national Democrats to figure out how to make sure Joe Biden's name appears on ballots here, reports AL.com's Mike Kaysen. Alabama Secretary of State Wes Allen put Democrats on notice this week that the Democratic National Convention, where the party's presidential candidate is officially nominated, falls a few days after the state's deadline to submit a certification of a nominee. A statement from Alabama Democratic Party Chair Randy Kelly, quote, "The Alabama Democratic Party and the Democratic National Committee are in discussions regarding a resolution ensuring President Biden's ballot access. While this issue with convention dates has occurred many times in the past, notably with the Alabama GOP in 2004, 2012, and 2020, it appears to only be a problem with this year now that the Democrats' convention is behind the deadline." Meanwhile, the Biden campaign said his name will be on the ballot in all 50 states, noting that provisional ballot certification has previously been granted in Alabama and other states. Another high-end auto theft took place in Alabama this past weekend, reports AL.com's William Thornton. Now, in this one, the thieves knew what they were doing. At North Country Ford in Arab, early Sunday morning, the camera system was taken down, footage was erased, and a computer was used to get into a safe and take 330 keys out. General Manager Greg Anthony said all these vehicles have push-button starts, so all you need is for the key to be nearby when you start the car. So instead of having to match keys with cars, the thieves could just pass around a big sack of keys as they cranked up the cars one at a time. The haul, folks, $1.2 million worth of merchandise. That includes 8 vehicles, one of them a $158,000 Dodge Challenger Demon. Now, how many people have ever spent $158,000 on anything that didn't at least have 2 bedrooms and 2 baths? Authorities have already recovered a Jeep Wagoneer near Bluntsville and a Ford Bronco Raptor in Bessemer. Arab police and the FBI are investigating. It's not unusual to have a Country Music Award nomination with an Alabama connection. Mac McAnally alone has seen to that with his string of CMAs. But here's a cool one for an award I didn't realize existed. The Academy of Country Music's 2024 Outdoor Venue of the Year. Now, it's one of what they call the Industry Awards. The Wharf Amphitheater in Orange Beach drew a nomination for that honor this week, reports AL.com's Mary Colerso. Now, it's the 4th year in a row and the 5th time the Wharf has been nominated. Mary pulled a list of the country artists playing the Wharf this summer. They include Luke Bryan, Alabama, Cody Jenks, that's my boy there, Cody Jenks, Dierks Bentley, Cole Swindell, Parker McCollum, Kane Brown, Jordan Davis, Billy Currington, and Kip Moore. Now, other outdoor venues nominated were Red Rocks Amphitheater in Colorado, Ascend Amphitheater in Nashville, St. Augustine Amphitheater, and Santa Barbara Bowl. Hey, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to talk automakers and auto worker unions. Won't be but a minute.
All right, glad y'all made it back. William Thornton has for years covered business and workplace and economic issues, among other topics, for AL.com. He's a writer and an author, a good baseball fan for the wrong team, and he's been a colleague of mine dating back to the Birmingham News daily print newspaper days. Bill, as I said that, it occurs to me that that has been a while now. Welcome back to the show.
Good to be here.
You've been covering the automaking industry for the past several years in Alabama. Now, if anybody still sees that as a shiny new economic novelty, they're behind the times because it is a major player in the economy. Can you talk about the growth of that industry here?
Well, the growth begins with Mercedes-Benz. Mercedes announced that they were coming to Alabama in the early 90s. They began producing in the late 90s, 1997, I believe. Then after that, you have the coming of Honda, Hyundai, and then in the last 5 years, Mazda, Toyota. And that's just been an upward trajectory pretty much since the beginning. Last week, Alabama surpassed South Carolina as the country's largest exporter of passenger vehicles. It's about $11 billion a year. And that's significant because, of course, you know, Alabama wasn't even making cars 25 years ago. When you think about what that means, that's not just the automakers themselves, which there's five automaking companies in Alabama, but that's also this really extensive network of auto suppliers. And these are dotted all over Alabama, in fact, all over the South. And they're very significant parts of the local economies in these small towns because you get a plant in a small town that makes, seats or interiors or doors or the lining. And, you know, it can inject a significant amount of money into a very small area quickly.
Now, like all industries, these companies are here to maximize profit. The government wants to maximize production, and the workers want as much pay and benefits as possible. Now, with more money in this here than ever, the United Auto Workers sees a role that it wants to fill here. And in the past weeks, they've been very clear about their moves to make a play in the market. Can you talk a little bit about that and about some of the back and forth that's been going on between the government officials here and the union?
So last year, the UAW began what was called a stand-up strike against the big three automakers in Michigan. And it was a pretty extensive campaign, but it was different than the traditional model. Instead of all going on strike at the same time, you saw this very targeted walkouts in different plants with the tone of them steadily escalating to more plants and more plants until pretty soon you saw the big three making concessions. And, depending on who you ask, you saw these pay raises of about 25% over the next 4 years for these automakers, for the auto workers, I should say. Well, that was kind of the signal that the UAW was going to go on the offensive. So at the beginning of this year, they announced that they were going to begin campaigns at Southern automakers in states where there is very little union activity. In Alabama, we've hovered around 10% union activity over the last few years. In 2020, it was about its lowest level. You've seen more activity, things like the Warrior Met Coal strike or the effort over at Amazon and Bessemer. But this is kind of on a different order because UAW had tried to organize at Mercedes-Benz maybe 10 years ago with very little success. They've tried twice at the Volkswagen plant in Chattanooga, and and they've had failed there, and also in a plant in Mississippi. So what you're seeing just this year at Mercedes-Benz and at Hyundai is a pretty significant change. What they have done is they've gone in, and it hasn't been like the other union campaigns with a lot of fanfare and a lot of publicity. What they've done is they've gone in, and when they get to 30%, they announce that they've had 30% of the workforce sign union cards. Now, under the rules of the National Labor Relations Board, you could petition for a union election at that point, but they haven't done that. They have said, we're aiming for 70% of the workforce. When they got to 50%, they announced that. When they got to 70%, they announced that last week. So now what their strategy is to request a petition for a union vote from the NLRB. Chattanooga did that just a few weeks ago. Theirs is scheduled for May, I believe, maybe May or June for Mercedes-Benz. And what you're seeing at that point is that if, for example, they do get a majority of workers who vote for the union, then they'll come back and begin collective bargaining with the union representing the employees. Mercedes reached 70%. Hyundai is still publicly announced 30%. So, you know, you would imagine that their next focus will be on Hyundai. And what that means, of course, is Alabama is a right-to-work state. So whatever election they have will be by secret ballot. A person who works at the plant cannot be compelled to join the union. And because it's a secret ballot, they can vote for or against with nobody knowing, no ramifications whatsoever. But to put it in perspective, this is a major situation to have Mercedes-Benz, which is the first auto plant in Alabama, to have a majority of their workers, a significant majority of their workers, vote or sign union cards. That's a big deal. And state officials have taken it as a big deal. Right after Mercedes and Hyundai pretty much announced 30% back in January, you saw Governor Kay Ivey, the state's commerce secretary, the Alabama Business Council, they all went into these public comments. There was a website created to share information that would be anti-union, basically. And you can see that this has gotten the attention of a lot of people, not just because it's automaking, which is, you know, a huge component of the state's economy, but, you know, what could lay beyond this? If you have a organized push to organize the state's automakers, at what point do you have it in other realms of the economy? And if you just go look, say, at the UAW Twitter page, you'll notice that they're not just organizing in auto plants. They're organizing on university campuses. They're organizing in other businesses that you would not think of as an automaker's union. So they're obviously really paying attention to the potential of this, not just for Mercedes, not just for Hyundai, but in other sectors.
Yeah, if their numbers are right, it sounds like a slam dunk, right? I mean, I'm hearing that right.
You would think so. You would think so. You know, you would think that somebody signing a union card would necessarily mean they're on board for a union. But since it's a secret ballot, you can't be sure. I would take you back to the Amazon strategy. Amazon and Bessemer had a union, the union of department stores and retail. They petitioned at 30%. But one of the problems that they had was that the workforce at the Amazon fulfillment center changes by almost 50% every year. You have a lot of people coming in, a lot of people going out. So it was really hard for them to maintain any kind of, continuity. They had two union elections. The first one didn't go their way. The second one was contested. We still don't really have a resolution on that, even though it happened 2 years ago. So, obviously you're seeing a lot more union activity. I would say that it's more union activity than Alabamians are used to, but you still have roughly 10% of the state's workforce is organized. Now, 10% is significant, but it's not nearly what you would expect for as much attention as unions are getting, is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. You mentioned the Warrior Met Coal strike. I'm just wondering, finger to the wind, ear to the ground. Has that whole issue, I mean, it was really contentious. Has it left, do you think, a bad taste in the mouth of a lot of people in that area? It's from the same region in Alabama. Or maybe the opposite. Maybe the business left a bad taste. Or did it have any effect at all for the sort of the climate in the Vance, Tuscaloosa area about unions?
Well, it's a pretty significant story. I mean, and it did not end well from the union perspective, although there is the potential that it could at some point. You know, the NLRB came back and said that the there was unfair practices during the strike. The company would not share information with the union, which made collective bargaining almost impossible. But you also had, you know, violence. You had reports of vandalism. And this was 2 years. So do I want to say that maybe the experience of the Warrior Met Coal strike had something to do with this? I don't know, but I suspect that a lot of this organizing in auto plants is connected in some ways with the bad taste that was left in people's mouths during COVID. You had significant sectors of the economy shut down because of COVID procedures. The auto plants were shut down for, I can't remember, but I know it was more than a week. And you had workers going in, trying to do their job with COVID procedures in place. When you talk to people who are in the auto industry, they talk a lot about the rise of contract workers who are not being paid the same as longtime employees, but they are in effect, you know, on the line doing roughly some of the same jobs as people who've been there for years, but not getting paid nearly as much. So that's left a bad taste in people's mouths as well. So, you know, there's some grievances here that if you were a worker, you would want some protection. And there's one other thing that I need to mention here is that lying in the back of all of this is the fact that somewhere down the line, the auto industry is going from the internal combustion engine to electricity. Mercedes spent $1 billion roughly getting their factory ready to produce electric SUVs and electric batteries in Bibb County. Well, what is that going to mean to workers down the line when you change basically their entire way of doing their job? You know, those questions are still being debated all across the auto industry. What's going to happen to the workers? What's going to happen to the way of doing business? How much of an effect is it going to have? So you can imagine that people who have to do this job are going to want somebody looking out for their interests.
Oh, that's, there's so many legs to this, just depending on how successful this union push is going to go. Well, thanks so much, Bill Thorne, for taking the time to talk to us. Y'all, he's on AL.com all the time. He's a prolific reporter, and he'll be covering this this issue with the automakers and the unions in the coming months. Thanks also, everybody, for taking the time to listen to our show. We'll be back again tomorrow. Until then, y'all come on by and see what we're up to on the internet at AL.com.